This is the Next Level Running Podcast, brought to you by the expert coaches at Rundoyan, helping runners of all levels crush their goals on race day by matching you with the perfect coach or training plan. Hello, and welcome to this month's edition of the Next Level Running Podcast. I'm your host, Jacob Phillips, and this month, we're talking about cross country. You know, the fall's coming, whether you're a high schooler, whether you're in the NCAA collegiate cross country system, whether you're a recreational or serious club runner, cross country is like the purest form of our sport. This month, I've got TJ Garlatz, expert coach at Rundoyan, with nearly 20 years of coaching at the NCAA level with an emphasis on cross country. He's coming in to be our guest to talk about the periodization of what a fall cross country season might look like, starting in the summer and working your way through to the peak. He talks about racing tactics and strategies. He talks about team versus individual strategies. We get into the nuts and bolts of training and the different things that you might want to do to be successful in cross country. It was a fun conversation. You know, last year, Coach TJ, he's at Western Washington University. His men placed 14th at the NCAA Championships. My women at Dallas Baptist were also 14th at the NCAA Championships. So between the two of us, we've got about 40 years of coaching cross country. So I hope you enjoy this conversation. I feel like Coach TJ is just so knowledgeable, and he has such a great and rich background in successful cross country training. This is a must listen if you're getting ready for the cross country season. I also want to tell you, hey, look, if you're not planning on running cross country, that's cool too. Coach TJ talks about how he ran his marathon personal best off of this sort of training. So I think that this conversation can apply to most anyone. It's a fun one. And without further ado, here's Coach TJ Garlatz as we talk about cross country. We bumped into each other a couple months ago at the NCAA track championships outdoors and said, hey, man, let's get you on for the podcast. And I know you and I, we're both probably gearing up for a pretty big fall, you know, and so with cross country. So we said, hey, let's talk about some cross country. And
totally.
How long have you been coaching cross country? I don't care what level cross country. How long have you been coaching cross country?
Kind of two part thing. I know you broke it up, so I could have started. So formally, I'd say I've been coaching cross country pretty much since I finished my cross country eligibility. I finished up running at the NCAA level in 2003. So 2004, I got into it. Before that, I'd actually coached a little bit at the high school level. I'd started out at a D1 where I wasn't quite fast enough to run. So I wanted to stay involved with the sport. So I helped out at my old high school. I was basically like that super senior who just would never leave. Didn't think it was weird at the time, but yeah, I probably could have moved on, but it kept me involved with the sport. So long time. This is going to be my 20th year coaching NCAA cross country this fall.
Wow. Yeah. And so I just finished my 18th. So I'm a year behind you. So together we've got about 40 years of NCAA cross country coaching on our resume. And so I'm assuming we can talk a little bit about cross country tonight, you know? So, you know, I'm in a sweatshirt, but it's because the AC is on. It's been 100+ degrees here in Texas. What's it like up there for you guys in Washington right now?
Honestly, pretty nice. So I'm in Northwest Washington in Bellingham, Western Washington University. I think the high temps today were like low 70s.
Wow.
And so me running home, took off my shirt halfway through, still was sweaty. And it felt like, oh man, this is a pretty nice running weather. And
gosh,
and yeah, it's, we don't have it hard in the summertime.
You know, when we wake up in the morning to run, it'll be in the 80s. Like it'll be in the 80s in the dark. And so I'm in Dallas, I'm at Dallas Baptist, and you know, we're both instantly Division II coaches. We see each other at nationals and such, but yeah, it's different, you know, but obviously we don't have the winter that you guys have to deal with. But you know, this is a timely conversation because I turned 40 in May, and so one of my best friends, he decided he's going to run the U.S. Club Cross Country Championships. He's a masters runner as well. I said, I'll be a masters this year. Maybe I'll do that. You know, I haven't raced, I think, since 2015 or 2016. And so I'm going to start training for the U.S. Club Championships in December. So we're about 20 weeks out from that. So talking some cross country training, that's going to be beneficial for me as well as I might, you know, put the spikes back on at some point this fall, you know?
Totally. And I know that like a lot of times these Rundoyan Next Level Running Podcast deal a lot with like marathoning and whatnot. And as I've been thinking about it, like one thing I do really want to put to people out there, I ran my marathon PR maybe, what was it, like 6-8 weeks after running a 10K cross country race, which was my focus for the fall. I was training hard for cross country, building up my long run, getting in good threshold, getting in good hill work, doing all of that stuff, being very consistent. And I realized I was getting in some of the best fitness of my life. And I'm like, you know what? I need to go back to the marathon. And so I actually had like an 8-minute PR or something like that. When I ran my best, and it was totally off cross country training for the most part. And then just kind of pivoted just a little bit at the end, just to carry that cross country fitness over to the 26.2.
Man, that's awesome. And I think, like, you know, whenever we were probably growing up in the sport, you know, for me, that was like the golden era of the sport. But I feel like all those great marathoners and all those great 10,000 meter runners, they always did world cross country. You know, there was something just so romantic about cross country, right? It was like the purest form, and they were just grinding. And then they would take that and they would go to either, you know, to run fast on the roads, or even, you know, 10K steeplechase on the track, something like that. Tell me what do you love about cross country? Like, you know, cause some people, they love the marathon, they love track. What do you love about cross country?
I like a lot of things about it. First and foremost, it's kind of how I got involved with the sport, at the high school level. The team and the social side of it in the beginning was what drew me in. I'd played other sports growing up, soccer and baseball. And the thought of running was not really on my radar. And I just started at late high school, and I'm like, hot dang, this is pretty fun. And the measurable aspect of running in general, but getting tied in with a group of people who took a little bit of the pressure off initially compared to track. I mean, it's very measurable and it's nice in that regard, but, yeah, that is one thing I really like. And then the other aspect that I really like is the fact that like the courses are different. The terrain is different. You encounter different things, and quite honestly, like, I know that we focus so much on time with most of the rest of our sport. Like if you're on a marathon, it's all about what was your time. Mm-hmm. Very rarely you're worried about what did you place. In cross country for a majority of us, maybe not when like we go back, like, cause I've actually done that same USATF cross country. I had no concept of what place really meant there. It didn't mean anything to me, but when most of us do cross country at the high school or the college level, or even like the local club level, you have an idea of place, and that's really what matters. It's like, did you beat the other person? How does your team do? And that's just such a great thing instead of worrying about it. It's like, okay, you could beat someone by 2 seconds or 20 seconds. Hey, that still counts as a point right there. And that's what we're chasing. We're chasing those points for the team.
Yeah, I agree, man. I think like just the team aspect of it, the social aspect of it, like, you know, you if you're and like obviously there's some road relays and stuff, but for the most part, running is a pretty individualistic pursuit, right? Until you get that team, and cross country is it's the ultimate team sport. You've got to have, right, you know, five at the high school and college level, you know, and I like what you said, even about the club level, because I think sometimes we miss out on this idea that there is a club level to cross country. You know, my buddy who's basically wrangled me into running the cross country championships in December, you know, he sent me his schedule. He's moving to the Seattle area, and he's like, there are club races throughout November to lead into the you know, the nationals. And so, I mean, it's a huge thing, right, that you might not quite know about outside of your, oh, yeah, I'm going to run for this marathon or whatever. But I love the team aspect. Going back to the team aspect of it, like, you know, right now, like, you know, for us college coaches, we can't train with our runners in the summer, right? They're, some of them may be on campus, but most of them are spread out wherever they're at. And that's the thing I preach to my team all summer. It's like, you're not out there doing this for you. You're out there doing this for your team. And I think there's such a greater purpose, and there's so much more intentional when it's not just about them, but there's that team aspect to it.
Yep.
So
yeah, no, I know like my group of guys and gals when they're checking in, and I apologize if you hear like the plane that's flying overhead, sounds like bigger than a normal plane, or I don't know what's flying over there, but I can't quite see it. But But when they're kind of checking in and kind of just, they always want to tell me what's going on and all that stuff. They're always just so excited to see what their teammates are doing. Like they're excited in the track season when their teammates are putting in good training and whatnot, but it's never the focus. When they're checking in track, it's always just about them. And when people are checking in the summer and asking how things are going, man, they just want to know about their teammates. And that just makes it makes it more valuable. I know that a lot of us who were in running, some of us started earlier, some started later, but the people who were fortunate enough, in my view, to be able to be part of a team and a cross country side of it, like those friendships really like last a long time. And those relationships go more than just like what the results are on a piece of paper. And that's really the beauty of cross.
You know, I think when I talk to alumni, very rarely do they bring up PRs. They either bring up, you know, the crazy muddy course that they ran together or the van rides to them. I mean, it's about the experience with your team, right? And I think that's super cool. So I have a question for you as a coach, coaching a team, because I want to go back to this idea of, you know, cross country is not really about time for the most part, right? For the most part, it's not about time. It's about beating people, getting that lowest stick, you know, getting those points, you know, every point matters kind of thing. How do you try to ingrain that into your team? Like so if we've got high school coaches out there or other college coaches listening, like how do you work to try to ingrain this idea of it's not about your time? It doesn't matter if it's a fast course or slow course, you know, fourth place is better than fifth place and 25th is better than 26th, right? How are you ingraining that to them, or how are you trying to teach that?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I think that a lot of it comes authentically just through the experiences that they create by training together. I'll say it's like it's awesome to have like the individual national champions and whatnot in that regard, but especially like throughout your career, normally you don't have that, and normally like a lot of the successes really are reliant upon other people, and because you are reliant, you realize that we really do bring each other up, and it helps so much. And so I try to put a little bit of the, not coaching responsibility, but some of the camaraderie and the connectedness and everything like that on the hands of the people who are on the team. Like I will say that like I check in with all my athletes in the cross seasons and in the track seasons and whatnot, but especially in the summer, like I don't actually check in. Like I don't actively reach out too much to the kids in the summer, even though it's the one time of the year I don't have access to them. So I should be checking in more. I leave it to a kind of like a group of people that are checking in and tying it together. And so that's definitely part of it. And then honestly, I think some of it too, is when I actively go recruit the kids, I don't necessarily always just go for the fastest. Sure, that's great. But I really put the vision of what I'm looking for with the team and it being part of a team, and do you want to be part of the team and let's compete for championships and that. And certain people really do gravitate to that. Some people, yeah. I mean, I will say I've had athletes on cross country teams where it still is a lot about themselves, and the team success is fine and good, but their individual success trumps all. And I do see, like, obviously individual success can help the team. But really like trying to find those kids that love that team aspect of it, goes a long way too. And so I know it's kind of rambling, but yeah, it's one where it just, yeah, it's there. And get good people, good people who care about other people. I think it tends to breed to good teams.
No, I completely agree with that. And I like what you said about, you know, like you're letting like kind of a group of people check in on the team. It's crazy to me how leadership kind of builds whenever you give kids the opportunity, right? Like they embrace that ownership of, man, I'm leading this team. I'm helping lead this team in the right direction. And that's one of the great lessons of sport, right? Is this idea of growing leaders. And but so let me put you on the spot here. What are your needs to know for cross country? So let's say, like, you know, there's a high school kid happens to listen to this, or mom and dad listen to it and said, hey, listen, this is this sport cross country, you know, like what are the needs to know real quick? Just a short list, nothing too crazy, but a needs to know about cross country.
from like a training aspect of it, or like a camaraderie aspect of it, or
am I trying
to convince high school kids to come out, or are we trying to get someone faster? What's the main thing?
Yeah. So like, I guess like, hey, you know, I'm assuming our typical listener is probably 5K, 10K marathon, half marathon. They don't do cross country.
Okay.
Tell me what cross country is.
Yep. So cross country, I don't know how it is, like the different countries, different levels with regards to like how they dictate a team, but normally in like the American system, and I think the Canadian system's a little bit like it too, is normally you've got teams of like 7 to 10 who are racing at a time, and normally 5 score. Mm-hmm. And when you run the race, you add up the points of the top 5, the fastest 5 that day. So first place counts as 1 point, 8th place counts as 8 points, yada, yada, yada. Lowest score wins. In the American system, especially when you go to championships, you run 7 in the championship races, you add up the top 5, and number 6 and 7 can displace. So they don't actively help your score, but they can make the other team's scores be a little bit higher that you're going for. And yeah, that's kind of like cross country. The courses, depending on the level, have various differences with regards to terrain. It's not like you're running on the track or the roads where everything is similar. You could run through slop, you could run on manicured golf courses. The NCAA is pretty soft, especially in some of the championship styles of things that you see. Typically cross country is run in the fall as opposed to the spring. A lot of places start to get some nasty weather, as you alluded to, where I live. We enjoy the beauties of the late spring, and the summer is awesome, and the early fall is amazing, and late fall, you never know what you're going to get. Like I've had regional, I guess we had our regional championships last year in Montana, and we were running in snow, and then at nationals,
yeah,
we were running in snow.
We were in Denver for regionals, and it was covered in snow.
So you kind of never know what you're going to get. Mm-hmm. And you kind of throw the time out the window, and yeah, you're still running hard. It still matters running fast and everything there, but the specific numbers don't really mean as much to me. Like if someone messages me trying to like get a spot on the team or try to earn some scholarship money, and they'll throw a cross country time out, it's like, well, that's fine and good, but it's possible the course is short, or the course is long, or the course is hilly, or whatever. It's like, it's harder to compare functionally in that regard. But you can always look at like where people are stacking up compared to other runners. And it's a fun beast.
No doubt. And typically, I know there's some states that do it different, but in high school, it's typically 5K for boys and girls. And then college, we go 5K until the championship season for the women. And then they run 6K. And then
do you guys go 5K a lot of the season
for high school?
No, for girls. Or for the women at DBU, are a lot of your guys' races 5Ks?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah, for us, like most of our women's races are 6Ks. Our first race, like the early one,
yeah,
it's actually a 5K and a 5K for men, but then the rest of the season, our women are running 6Ks.
So we'll do – our first 6K won't be until conference for the women.
Wow.
Yeah, and so we'll bump to 6K for the championship season, and then, you know, the men, obviously 8K until championship season, but yep. – Yeah, very rarely do we get a 6K before conference. But, you know, that's how it is.
Yeah, and then so that's one thing, like for you listeners out there, I mean, the courses are different. At the high school, sometimes you'll be in California and you'll be running at Mount Sac, and that's mm-hmm. like, it's like 2.96 or whatever it is. And some people run 3 miles, and some people will run 5Ks. Some states will run some 4Ks. And there you go. If you're outside of America, I guess you're probably running a lot of 5Ks and 6Ks and whatnot mm-hmm. in that regard. You stated the Ks. But yeah, it's a fun go.
So real quick, when you talk about like, you know, you talk about the Mount Sac course, you know, it's notoriously hilly. You've been all over the place. What's your favorite course that you've either coached on or run on, your favorite cross country course?
That's
like your Wrigley Field or your Fenway Park of cross country in America.
That's you really put me on the spot. So like I actually don't necessarily have one
okay
right now, like in terms, like when you said like the Wrigley and Fenway, like I have some that have really good memories. So the place that we're going to race nationals this year, mm-hmm. The Joplin course, I've had a lot of really, really, really good success coaching wise there. It's like I had a men's team get third at nationals there, and we had an individual national champion at that place, and a lady was runner up and whatnot. And actually another time there, the two times my men's teams have been third at nationals have been at Joplin. And,
wow.
And I wouldn't say like just looking at the course, I necessarily love it, but my kids have run well there. So it's like, that's the place I love. So I'm excited to hopefully have the opportunity to go back, this spring. What are your courses?
So I love the Joplin course, the Missouri Southern course. That's we typically that's a close enough drive that we typically will hit that up every season. We're not going to be able to this year, but we typically hit it up, which is weird because it's pre-nationals. We should go, but
yeah,
it doesn't fit for us this year. But I love that course. You know, honestly, our regional course is in Lubbock, which I hate West Texas. I hate altitude. It's not a high altitude, but it's an awesome course. And we've always run, our women at least have always run well at regionals there. And so, so those are two for me. I mean, like, you know, I thought the course at nationals last year in Tacoma was fine. You know, I thought that was fun. Were you in 2017 when we were in Pittsburgh?
Oh, that Pittsburgh one was rough.
That was one of the worst courses I've ever seen, right? And it's
sorry, Pittsburgh people, but yeah, it was too narrow. It was too side stuff. It was too bushy.
Not that
you should complain about that, because we've already said how sometimes it's just like a glorified golf course. But for people, and who knows, maybe that course would have been fine had it not had the combination of weather that we had leading up to it. But yeah, it was just too narrow. I think, I can't remember if it was the men's side or the women's side that they restarted like three times.
Yeah, I think it was the men. It was the men.
With that, just because of people falling too early. And there's like videos or pictures of just people totally getting smoked and whatnot. But
it was
like a Mines kit or something like that. But
it was like they had this such a small area and said, let's just put it all in this little, and it was like, yeah, you're right side. Anyways, so yeah, it was that was probably the worst course. Slippery Rocks is pretty, pretty brutal too. I don't know if you've ever been out to Slippery Rocks course.
They hosted in 08. That was a pretty hard one. You shot like, coaches, you always exaggerate, or runners, you remember it. But like, to me, it seemed like you just shot up like a 400 meter hill right from the start, and then took like a hard right turn, and then did a loop back around. But yeah, that was a tough course.
That was pretty tough. And so, and I'm kind of a wimp, you know, like if I'm running, I want it to be like pancake flat, you know, but
where's Club Nationals for you this year?
Tallahassee. So I think it's
okay.
Pretty flat and that'll fast, which would be good for me. But, so let's talk here about the training a little bit. And so, like without going into to huge detail, when you're getting ready for your college season, when do your kids start getting ready with, say, their base, and like, what does that training look like? Just kind of some snapshots of the phases or whatever that looks like for you.
Yep. So, I like to get them running easy early. So say if they're an athlete who makes it through like our conference championship, that's a couple weeks before nationals. Normally, like, they'll take their couple weeks like decompress, and then they'll just start kind of slowly building into it. If someone's fortunate enough to have been to the national meet, or they're younger and maybe they went to like USATF like juniors or whatever, and some of our high school kids coming in went to like Nike Outdoor Nationals or whatnot. So some people, if they have a later one, just give them a couple weeks and then gradually start building up. One thing that's unique about cross country compared to track is that in track, you qualify based on, in most places, you qualify either for a regionals meet or a conference meet or a national meet or whatever, based on your fastest time in the season. So you're incentivized to really make sure that you definitely hit that peak. Whereas in cross country, you qualify at regionals, which is near the very end. And so in track, you can basically kind of cook the soup kind of hot. And if you happen to peak a little bit early and you run super fast early, well, then you qualified for nationals, you qualified for something, and you might need to pivot a little bit. Cross country, if you're running really fast in September and you've got a November regionals, that's a tough position to be in.
Yeah.
So you kind of have to err on the side. I personally try to err on the side of not overextending kids in cross country. And I actually look at it as a holistic year-long plan. So cross country builds into the track season. I'm fine with kids doing threshold work a lot of the summer. I know that that's like a general term. Like, it's just, some people like call threshold this, some people mean that with it. I generally don't want people to run faster than a pace that they could, if they're racing maximally for an hour, don't go that much faster than that in the summer.
Yeah.
Not that I want you going an hour of threshold at hour, but like you'll hear kids just like, hey, I did a threshold run when functionally it's a 3 or 4 mile time trial. That's not threshold stuff, but I think people can do hill strides and, or if you don't have access to hills, like good efficiency work, and threshold work and long runs and mileage all summer.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how I approach it. And then when we report end of August, early part of September, that's kind of when our school doesn't start till end of September. So we have them come about a month earlier. At that point, we'll probably have had a few weeks where they're doing some light fartlek just to acclimate their legs to race pace. That's one thing that's important to remember is that like, it's really hard to run, say your goal is to run 5 minute pace for something. It's really hard to run 5 minute pace if all your volume is at like 6:30 or 7 and your threshold works at like 5:20 to 5:30 pace. It's hard to run 5 minutes for 30 minutes or 15 minutes or whatever your focus is if you're not doing faster stuff. I don't love doing like really hard interval sets that like say like 800 with a minute or two recovery at 5K pace early on.
Mm-hmm.
I would say maybe you do a minute and take 2 minutes rest, just getting that neuromuscular turnover.
Yep.
You can do some of that in the summer. I don't want you to run too hard in the summer though.
Yeah.
Err on the side of like, you'd rather have the workout be too easy than too soft. And then even in September, October, and I know like most of the people that'll be listening to this, they will be focused on like a November peak.
Yeah.
September for sure. You don't want to really be going hammering too hard. October, you can start to go pretty hard.
Yeah.
But that's kind of my thought with it. And then depending on what your racing schedule is, I know high school kids race a whole ton, sometimes two times a week.
Yeah.
College kids run every other week. But the races are an important part of the training too.
For sure.
What's your thought with it?
No, I 100% agree with the summer. You know, for me, you know, we want them to do, you know, kind of progression runs, you know, so those naturally progressive and just kind of, you know, feel good. But again, we don't want to run fast. We don't want to run too hard. We want everything to be repeatable. I feel like that's what I say a lot is like, it needs to be repeatable in the summer, right? Like if it's so hard, you can't do it, you know, a day later or 2 days later, then it was probably too hard. You know, yep. I'm a big believer in doing two things. One, we try to convince our kids every Friday that we're not racing to do some 200s on the track. And it's not, it's just rhythm 200s and it's a small, yeah, it's two sets of five, right? But it's just rhythm work. It's neuromuscular work. It's nothing that's like supposed to like, it's nothing. It's just good rhythm work, right? That I think is a great break from the monotony of the mileage grind, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm a big believer in if you can find a hilly course, you know, run over that 2-3 times a week, make your long run hilly, that kind of thing. We don't do, or we hope not to do any structured workouts until they get onto campus, right? Like nothing, like we won't do a 6 times a mile tempo with a, you know, minute rest or what. We won't do any of that type of stuff. It's primarily just building that volume, progression runs, you know, which at the end you're touching on some, you know, tempo, whatever you want to call it, you know, at the end there. But yeah, really just trying to use the summer to build. Like you said, if you're great in September, it's really hard to be great in November. Like that's a long time to hold that, that fitness, and a lot can go wrong. Do you guys do, so once you have them back, so we actually, I think our kids move back in 15 days. I mean, so we're starting here pretty quick. I think, August 10th, they move back. We don't start practices, but they move on to campus. They go through all their paperwork and stuff. We won't start practice until like the 14th, but I mean, 15 days, they move on to campus and they'll do some captain's stuff, I'm sure, you know, because they'll want to run with people versus by themselves. Right. But do you guys, so once you have them there, or maybe even, so I know you said some hill strides, do you do any sort of hill work at all outside of just hill strides? Do you do hill repetitions, hilly runs? Like, what does that look like for you guys?
Bellingham is very, very, very hilly.
Okay.
Like I'm just getting back into shape. I'm not training for anything. I took the hill. I live about 5K from school. I did a 7 mile run on my way home to make it a little bit prettier, ran by the water, ran through a park, and to try to make it flatter. And I probably still had 600 feet of elevation. And that was my flat run.
Yeah.
Like it's not uncommon for some of our kids, if they're, and some of our guys put in some decent volume, some of our gals put in some decent volume, but it's not uncommon to have the 10 miler where you have 1,000 feet. That's wow. Actually super common, and some of it even more so. Mm-hmm. And so hills just naturally are part of what we do.
Yeah.
There's definitely times that I'll have, and I did it a ton when I was coaching up in Anchorage, but actually replacing like a long threshold run with or that stimulus where you want to have like 30 plus minutes of work of threshold, mm-hmm. where we actually have hills that'll go up like 2,000 feet.
Wow.
And over the span of like a 10K, and it just go out there and try to run in that like threshold zone. You have to throw pace out the window and you're running by feel. But yeah, you can get your aerobic system just totally pumping. You get that like basically like that lactate threshold stimulus going on. But then actually don't have the same pounding that you would if you're running on flat ground. When you're running uphill, you just have a little bit less ground reaction forces, a little bit less pounding. Granted, if you have to get your butt back down, you have some pounding, and so you kind of figure out how you're gonna do it. So you run hard up and easy down.
Yeah.
But even that downhill stress, if you're used to it, it really does build up some good strength. So hills, there's a reason why they say hills pay the bills.
100%. Yeah. And I think like those, like you said, that long duration uphill climb, you know, like that was huge for me in my own running. We don't use it quite as much. So we do a lot of like we'll do, we've got a hilly course, you know, so it's not like every run is hilly, right? But we have a hilly course, and that's where we'll do our long run. And then we do 400 meter hill repeats, but it's continuous. And so if the men are doing say 16 times a 400 meter hill up, they're jogging down, that's like an 8 mile fartlek, right? So they're, it's continuous. Yeah. And so we're trying to get that. So give me, okay. So I kind of get the layout of your fall, right? But give me some of your favorite sessions for cross country, like getting your kids ready for racing season. What are some of your favorite sessions?
For men, and so these are guys that are training for 8K, 10K as a focus. Mm-hmm. I really like 7 to 8 by a K.
Okay.
Probably starting at 8K race pace, cutting down to 5K race pace with about, I guess, basically I just say on the 5 minute. Mm-hmm. I've got guys, so for someone out there, about 2 minutes rest.
Okay.
My guys, they're aiming to probably not run 24 minute 8Ks, but getting comfortable running in that zone. My ladies, a similar workout since they're training for 6K, they don't need to have as much volume. And because the pace is just a little bit slower, I think like 800s in that boat, maybe not seven or eight of them, but maybe like six, you have six or seven by 800. Mm-hmm. I think that a couple workouts like that, plus starting to race, I think that turns the long run volume threshold hill stride fitness into fitness being able to race well in the target distance. We do a lot of threshold work and progressive runs too, that I think that you really can do that in a 10K. If I were working back at the high school level, which a lot of the kids are focused on in the country who are running cross country, I think that like 400, 600s and 800s at like probably starting at 5K pace, cutting down to 3K pace, mm-hmm. is a pretty darn good way to do that stuff. But like kind of like you alluded to, and kind of like I said, I don't want to go to that earlier than I have to.
Yeah.
So like my workouts in September aren't probably going to have a good K session like that, or a good 800 session like that for my gals, unless I'm going to a meet like a pre-nationals where you're trying to score points and you have to run fast.
Yeah. Yeah, so for sure.
If you're fortunate enough that all the chips lie on your regional meet or at the high school level, sometimes they call it like districts or regions, whatever. If you know you're going to make it to that point without worrying about it, then you don't have to run fast in September.
For sure.
But if you have to earn points at the NCAA level or whatnot, then sometimes you just have to manage carrying your fitness a little bit better, if you will.
For sure. Really quick, because we alluded very beginning of the conversation, we talked about this team idea, this team aspect of it. Are there any workouts that you do that help with like, you know, like say running as a pack or something like that, like with team racing strategy? Is there any workouts that you will do like that?
Not like a specific session that's designed just for that, but we definitely practice that in a lot of our sessions.
Mm-hmm.
Some all And it really is helpful to have your teammates near you in workouts, and then similarly in races, if you can. And so a lot of the times it might be like, if I were to do that K session with the guys, like 7 to 8 by a K, and our team, we're, for better or for worse, we're pretty darn similar. We have a lot of guys that are pretty similar. We don't have anyone that's like definitively like way, 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 way better that they shouldn't run with the group. And so a lot of those things, it's like, hey, let's keep the group together for 4 or 5 of them. And then you can start to not necessarily compete, but you can start to cut down a little bit more later on in the latter few. And then one thing that I do with it is there is times that I work on having like my stronger guys and gals kind of teach the younger kids how to do it. Like they'll take it and then they'll kind of like be pointing right next to them. And it's like, hey, you stay right here and whatnot. And then there's other times I don't like it where people are just almost pigeonholed, like, hey, the top guys need to do all the leading and the younger kids or whatever, they're always having to follow, enable some of the other people to gain a little bit more confidence. So it's not always just the same people doing the work. Cause I don't want a team where someone pegs themselves as the number 5 all season and that's all they're able to be. You have some kids that, you know how that works, where they limit themselves just based on their perceived spot on where they should be on the team. And so just kind of switching that up.
Yeah. I actually went away from like naming an A group, a B group in workouts because of that exact reason, because, I'm a B group person. Well, we might need you to be A group today, like someone's out, someone's not having a good day and we need you to step up. And so I actually went away from like trying to separate it in that regard. But so for the when you're talking about, the marathon, the half marathon, we're talking even splitting, we're talking negative splitting, that sort of stuff, being really careful with what you do early in a race. Do you try to coach that same way with the racing strategy for cross country? So for 6K for the women or 8 to 10K for the men?
Yeah, that's a hard one. Cause I mean, I love being able to do that, but there's times like you just quite honestly deal yourself out of a race if you get out too slow. And so like one race I was super proud of, last year, my men were second at the regional championships behind Chico State, who are just an awesome team. And it's the one, I think it was when we were second, I think it was the best that Western has done at a regional meet, before, but it was snowy. I didn't know how it was going to be. And I just didn't want to deal with my guys like negative splitting or even splitting if the whole race went out. And just like, sometimes it's very difficult to be there when like, if the whole pack is like way ahead of you and like, you know, you're running your race and you have to have confidence in it. But if other people are going hard and you're going hard and it feels hard for you, it's hard to do that. So I actually kind of like took the reins off and like let them kind of go for it. And they maybe took me a little bit more than what I intended. And quick scoring it. Like if you look at 6K, I didn't even ever go look back, but like we might've been actually leading at 6K, which was pretty darn shocking with it. But sometimes you kind of have to like look at the course, what you're going to see. So any D2 coach out there who's listening to this, I can tell you ahead of time, Joplin is going to get out hot.
You have a downhill, then a little uphill, but it does start down.
If you do not get out at Joplin hot, you have no, virtually no chance.
Well, and then it narrows
really
down.
Really, 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 really difficult.
Yep.
And so I actually have some workouts designed where it's like, okay, it's for the men, it's a 1K, 3K, 2K, 3K, 1K. The 1K, you run at 5K pace, just you're practicing getting out, and then you drop back to almost threshold. Then the 2K is like at 10K pace, and then the 3K is back at threshold, and then you practice finishing hard when you're tired with it. And so you have to kind of analyze the course. If there's going to be narrow parts of the course and it's going to string out, your butt has to get out.
You got to get out.
The footing is going to be tough if you're in the back. You got to get out. That said, cross country is a brutal sport. If you get out too hard, you don't have fitness. So don't get out hard if you don't have fitness. So hopefully my guys and my gals are training hard, because if I send them out hard at nationals, if they make it there, they better be fit or else it's going to be a pretty miserable last 2K.
I can tell you, man, like you've got to be doing the work now so you can do that later. Right. And so, TJ, I don't want to take too much of your time tonight. This was fun. I think, without getting into to too much anymore, but the fact that you ran a marathon PR 6 to 8 weeks after training for cross country, man, if that's not a selling point for someone saying, hey, I'm gonna try cross country, you're casual runner, I don't know what is. Right. So, but hey, man, totally. I'm a, Yeah, I'm thankful for you coming on here tonight, man. I'm excited to hopefully we will both be in Joplin in November.
Totally.
We'll both be racing our teams at Nationals. And if you get in shape, hey, let's go do the club championships, man.
We'll see on that one. No promises, but we'll see. I've been challenged by another coach to run at a 5K in the spring. Mind you, he was a multi-eventer, and I'm was 5K, 10K guy. So he's being nice there, but yeah.
Well, hey, cross country fitness will lead to an awesome track mark. TJ, thanks so much for being part of this. I'll put your contact info in the show notes whenever this comes out later in August. But thanks so much, man. Awesome. And hopefully I'll see you in the season.
Take care.
Bye. And that's it for our conversation tonight with Coach TJ Garletz. I hope you enjoyed the conversation. It's cross country is, like I said before, it's the purest form of our sport, and it's such a great sport. And so even if you don't plan on getting on the grass or the hills and racing some cross country, I still think this was a great conversation to learn how you can improve your own running, whether that's on the roads or whatever. But hopefully you enjoyed it. If you can, take a moment this month to check out our show notes, and below I've got Coach TJ's contact information where you can reach out to him and connect with him if you're looking to find a coach or just want to kind of follow up on maybe some of the stuff he talked about tonight with cross-country training. Also, in the show notes, I have a link where you can click on and find our Instagram, our Run Doyen Instagram profile. We'd love for you to follow us there. You know, we host live events every month, and we try to brag on our clients. And so please make sure you're following us there. And then also, if you can, join our Facebook group, our Facebook community group, the Next Level Running community group there on Facebook. That's just an opportunity for you to join other like-minded runners who are looking to crush their personal best and crush their goals. And so it's just a great community there. And if you haven't, I want to quickly ask you, if you don't mind, go rate this podcast on your podcast platform of choice, whether that's Spotify or Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcast. We'd love a rating. We'd love to hear how we can be better and how we can do this better. But I want to thank Coach TJ again for just a fun conversation. Coach TJ and I go way back. We get to see each other throughout the year. And so this was fun to reconnect with him and talk about something we both love, which is cross country. But hope you enjoyed it tonight. And until next time, have a great run. Thank you for joining us here on the Next Level Running Podcast, your source for training advice from the expert coaches at Run Doyen. If you're ready to take your training and racing to the next level, head over to rundoyen.com and get matched to your ideal coach who will provide you with the highly customized online training you need for crushing your goals on race day.